Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 308. Greta.
John.
Happy belated autumnal equinox and Bilbo Frodo birthday.
Yes. Same to you.
Thank you.
Same to you. You're welcome. Bilbo's birthday was yesterday?
Yes.
Is that
and
correct?
Frodo.
And Frodo.
Yeah.
Yep.
They share a
so
birthday.
So we're only a day off.
What's that?
We're only a day belated.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
All right. In this episode, we will discuss, we'll be discussing episode 5 of The Rings of Power, Partings.
I never, ever, ever noticed the titles of episodes. Like, ever.
Well, there, if you, when you start it on Amazon, it says what the name of the episode is.
I know, like, I know that it says it, but I, like, not just this, but any show, I just don't take notice of the titles.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not really like the thing that, it's not like it says it at the beginning, you know, like it's like, you know, like for the movie, it'll be like, you know, Star Wars or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
With TV shows, they usually don't do that. They're usually just like the name of the TV show, and then they don't usually say the name of the actual episode, though. And this one's no different, but I always look that up because I think it's interesting to see what was going through the writers' minds and why they, what they named it, and think about why they named it that. Because a lot of times it's a, you know, it's some kind of theme.
True. Right? Yes, no, that is absolutely
true. Some kind of theme
true.
For the episode, which I think, you know, partings, I can see a couple of ways in which this, that applies as a theme to this episode.
Same, yeah.
All right, well, before we get too deep on that topic or anything else, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Get those hands up there. 3, 2, 1.
Whoopsht.
Boom.
Nice. Well done.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., and Scotchy Bobo. And a shout out to our newest patron, Cherie R. Cherie, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for becoming a patron. We really appreciate it.
Very much.
Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Your financial support helps the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way. Learn more at patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Hey, YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. If you are already subscribed, don't hit the subscribe button because I will unsubscribe you. So it's you don't need to hit it multiple times. You just subscribe that once and then like just consider it locked in for you.
Cool.
Wait, quick. Yeah.
Speaking of below, I just want to make sure, did you hide your rating for this one before you scroll down?
I did.
Okay, perfect.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just wanted to be sure before you scrolled.
All right.
Moving on.
Hey, and we're going to have lots more to say about the Rings of Power over the next few weeks and months, so click that notification bell as well to stay up to speed. All right. Well, let's talk about it.
Let's do it.
All right. So the background of this episode, it's directed by Wayne Che Yip, and he directed episodes 3 and 4 as well. So this is the third episode in a row that was directed by Wayne Che Yip.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was written by Justin Doble, and Justin Doble co-wrote episode 3, which was Adar, however you say it, and or I guess depending on which character you ask. Interestingly, I looked him up on IMDb because there wasn't a lot of info about him on Wikipedia, where I normally start, and he also plays the Milky-Eyed Southlander, according to IMDb. I haven't figured out exactly which background character that is, but he's been in a couple of episodes so far as a particular character.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Justin Doble has also worked on other TV shows, the most notable being Stranger Things. So he's worked on Stranger Things, written some episodes. I think he'd been directed a little bit for Stranger Things. So
cool.
It's a little bit about Justin Doble for
you. A little feather in his cap. I like it.
There you go.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's the background of this episode. Let's dive into the recap. So spoiler alert, as always, for our recaps and really the rest of this episode. If you don't want to know what happens, if you haven't seen the episode already, then we're going to spoil everything. All right. So just, you've been warned at this point, so watch at your own peril from here on out. If you want to, go watch the episode and then come back and listen to our discussion of it so that you don't get it spoiled for us.
Yeah.
You can always do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, recap. Nori and the Stranger discuss migration over a snail snack, and the Stranger discovers he's good. Poppy sings a pretty traveling song. Three sinister figures investigate the crater left by the stranger. Adar instructs an orc to summon the legions. Bronwyn encourages her fellow Southlanders to stay and fight, but a good number of them follow Waldreg and leave to surrender to Adar. Isildur fails to convince Elendil to bring along. On the expedition to Middle-earth. Eärien and Kimin discuss Faramir's failure to stop the expedition. Halbrand forges a sword and discusses Middle-earth with Miriel and Galadriel. Nori, Poppy, and another Harfoot are attacked by wargs, but the stranger rescues them. Galadriel instructs the Numenoreans in sword combat. Faramir reveals his true motives to Kimin. Tar Palantir pleads with Miriel not to go to Middle-earth. The stranger scares Nori away when their arms are almost frozen off. Durin dines with Gil-galad and Elrond in Lindon. Gil-galad reveals to Elrond the origins of Mithril and the elves' dire need to obtain it. Valandil punches Isildur and still refuses to help him get on the Middle-earth expedition. Kimin sneaks on board a Numenorean expedition ship and sets it on fire. He is saved by Isildur, who was stowing away. Miriel, in council with Galadriel and Farazon, questions the wisdom of the expedition. Elrond grapples with the need to break his oath to Durin. Halbrand is haunted by his past deeds, and Galadriel reveals that she's addicted to fighting. Waldreg leads a group of Southlanders in pledging their loyalty to Sauron. Adar forces him to prove his loyalty by blood. Theo reveals the sword hilt to Arandir, and they discover something of its dark origins. Adar's orcs march upon the remaining Southlanders. Elrond tells Durin of the elves' need of Mithril. Then the Numenorean's expedition departs for Middle-earth aboard three great ships with Isildur, Galadriel, and Halbrand aboard. So, anything I left out, the particular note there for the recap, Greta?
No, I think you did good. You actually mentioned something that I didn't remember.
What was that?
Happening. Miriel's council with Galadriel and Farazone. I don't remember her questioning the wisdom of the expedition, but I believe that she did.
Well, she basically says, so it's right after the ship explodes in the harbor, and then they're like, you know, Farazone's like, maybe we need to not go on this expedition until more of your people are behind you, right? And Galadriel's like, no, we've got to go, right?
Okay.
And Miriel's like, summon Halbrand, and then we'll discuss this in the morning.
Okay. Yes. All right.
And of course, her father had already kind of been warning her not to go.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what that scene was all about.
Appreciate you clarifying.
You bet.
I remember now. Yes.
All right. Well, let's discuss our thoughts on this episode. All right. So, might be a little sniffly today because of the change in the weather. It's feeling nice outside, everybody. Feeling nice where we are. We had like revenge of summer for a couple of days and the very last couple of days here. And then it was like 97 degrees and now it's like getting a little cooler, which is nice. But the allergies start, getting a little sniffly there.
A bit of a front coming in.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So our thoughts. So I liked, it's funny, you know, we talked about, I think, you know, we've talked about so far in past episodes how we both like, like the Harfoots and everything like that. We've actually gotten some pushback on that, a pretty strong pushback. And I think it's good pushback because as much as like, you know, we kind of like hobbity things and the Harfoots are obviously the hobbity thing in this episode or in this series so far. People have kind of made the point of like, these Harfoots are kind of brutal in the sense that like, they're like, hey, you did something wrong, so you're getting left behind, right? It's like, and I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, they sing that song about, like, we don't leave anybody behind, or we remember those we left behind.
They didn't leave anybody behind. They just put them at the back of the line.
Yeah, but they what was the term they used in the last episode, where they're, like, de-caravan them or something like that? They don't, basically say, like, you don't get to come along. You're on your own now, right? And that's basically what they, you know, what they did. And it's like, dang, that's pretty mean. I mean, it's not, you know, you might see them doing that for somebody who's like, you know, violently offends or something like that. But like, just for, you know, maybe telling a lie or something like that. Like you're going to decare, like just leave them behind to get, you know, for all of the perils that you might face. Right. Which I thought was kind of a good point. So, there seems to be a little bit of a, you know, maybe some hypocrisy in the Harfoots there. Now you look troubled by this.
I am a little bit. I don't think I completely agree.
Yeah.
I think brutal is the wrong word.
Okay.
I think that they have to be self-preserving, right? I mean, they're a very isolated race, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of disadvantages. Their size, and they don't seem to have a ton of skills. And so they have to be like, they've got to preserve themselves somehow. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think that, well, first of all, they didn't leave anybody behind. I mean, they may have used the word decaravan as like a threat or something, but they haven't actually done it. And well, in fact, in this episode, they actually, there is talk of that. There is talk of, like separating Nori and her family and the stranger and all of them from the caravan. And the leader, the old leader guy is like, seems horrified by that idea. Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, I think they're just trying to do what's in the best interests of the most. Like, they're just trying to help everyone survive.
Old leader guy's name is Sadok.
Sadok
Burrows.
Yeah. He seems horrified by that suggestion.
Yeah.
So that's just my two cents.
It sounds like they've done it to people before in the past, though, which makes me think, like, you know, because I was listening to, like, you know, their song a couple of episodes ago, where they're like, not their song, but they're remembering all these people that mm-hmm. like been left behind. And I'm like, how many of those people got decaravaned?
Like, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. There's like there's a ton of, during the migration, it's like it's a perilous journey.
Right? Yeah.
They even talk about that in this episode, about all the things that are in their way, right? Like wolves and, you know, like weather and, I mean, all kinds of things, right? So there's a lot of reasons people wouldn't have made it, I think, especially elderly and, you know, the unathletic types, maybe.
Well, we got some controversy on this point, so
that's fine.
We'll see how it all plays out. I can see people's point on the flip side of all of this. I think,
is the decaravanning the extent of it? Like, is that it, or have they said other things?
That's the gist of it. That's
I don't have a problem with decaravanning. I'm saying if you're a weak link, gone,
dang,
gone. I mean, I don't want people dragging me down. Like, when my life is at stake, I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, if I can carry you, I'll carry you. But if I can't carry you, I mean, survival of the fittest, yo. That's what I'm saying.
Remind me not to get on Greta's bad side.
But I'm also a nurse, so I'm very compassionate. But I'm just saying, like, life and death, if you can't hack it, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, but I think it's, I don't think, I don't want to belabor this point too much, but I would just say, like, they basically, like, almost decaravan them for bringing, you know, the stranger into their company. And I just, like, I don't, that to me just seems extreme. Like, I can see reasons why you might decaravan somebody. I'm not saying that. And it's not like it's, you know, the death penalty necessarily, but it's like, you know, and I get that they live in, like, you know, tough world, and they've got to have, like, you know, but even so, it's kind of like, oh, you know, I can see people's point of, like, the cute Harfoots and everything like that. And then, like, you know, and like they're funny and everything. And then it's like, but dang, they don't like it when people screw up. Right. Like, they're pretty mean when people screw up. So anyway, we'll let that one play out. I didn't even have that in my notes, but I wanted to bring it up because some people have mentioned that to us. So
to me, that's just balance, right? I mean,
yeah.
You got to have some survival instinct. You have to.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. And it's all well and good for us to be talking about it here in, you know, our comfy studio and in, you know, our 21st century modern, you know, accoutrements and settings and everything like that. But, you know, you think about it, you're like, these people, decaravanning might not have seemed like such a bad idea for them, right? Anyway, all right, let's talk about the stranger. So, stranger, I kind of liked this scene where he looked, you know, longingly at the moon. I still don't know, how, like, the thing that bothers me about the stranger is I feel like, you know, he's obviously somebody important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really important. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, this guy's a god. I mean, he came in a meteor. He's got to be some kind of, like, god-like figure.
Yeah.
You know, even if he's a lesser god. Like, he's some kind of god-like mm-hmm. figure. And he just doesn't seem very bright, you know? You know, and maybe he's just forgotten everything. Maybe the meteor journey took it out of him. But he seems like he should be a little brighter. That's one thing. But I'll kind of give him that, put that off to one side. With him, that scene of him looking at the moon longingly, that made me come back to this man in the moon theory, you know, that he's somehow, that he's somehow like the man in the moon. And this is sort of the showrunners picking up on this, you know, this song that's sung by the hobbits in Fellowship of the Ring about the man in the moon and, came down too soon. And it's like this, like, piece of lore that's just like exists in their ancient history. And for them, it's just like this, like, you know, little nursery rhyme, but it's actually something that exists that comes from an actual event, like deep in their history. That's so deep that it's kind of forgotten as a real event. Right.
Mm-hmm. And if he came down too soon, that would explain why he's maybe not
the man in the moon equipped. Came down too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Not equipped to really function in the world he finds himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. Now, something else that keeps on coming up with regard to the stranger is, was there more than one meteor? And I think people think that this might be the case because they say, like, oh, it was traveling this way over Lindon, but it was traveling this way over the Southlands. And first of all, I think people, it's just my opinion, I think people are giving the show writers, the writers too much credit in this regard. That is something that Tolkien would have, if he was writing this, he would have made sure that all, like, lined up, that the way people saw it would have, like, he would have been very detailed about that.
Mm.
But I don't get the sense that these writers are worthy of that credit at this point. Not trying to be mean, I just, they haven't proved that to me at this point. And in fact, they kind of have me feeling the opposite way. They just don't pay that close of attention to details like that. And I don't see any other strong evidence for the theory that there's more than one meteor anyway, right?
Yeah. We would have seen something by now, I think.
I feel like we're 5 episodes in, we would have seen some other evidence that there was another meteor. Now, maybe some people will say that this mysterious, you know, sinister figure with the short, the blonde buzz cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Blonde buzz. Maybe we'll call them blonde buzz for now. Maybe they'll argue that this was another meteor or something like that, right? And... you know, there were two people with the blonde buzz, so maybe there are two other meteors. I don't know. But anyway, there was no indication that that's where they came from other than just the interest in the meteor in the first place, in the crater in the first place from the stranger. So I don't see any strong evidence that there was more than one meteor. So
yeah, same.
At this point. All right, what did you think of Poppy's song?
Me?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Loved it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was beautiful and very touching. And I thought it was like great. Like, I thought it fit the scenery and the event, like the migration. I just really loved it. It was kind of haunting, but also a little cheering. What did you think?
I liked it. It was pretty. It was very pretty. I assume it was called Not All Who Wonder or Wander Are Lost. That would seem to be the refrain of the song, which, of course, the line "Not all who wander are lost" is one of the most famous lines from the Fellowship of the Ring. It refers to Strider, really to Aragorn. And so, you know, they're taking that and you know, sort of spinning off of it as a walking song, right? In the grand tradition of Hobbit walking songs, this is apparently a new one, and it was nice. It was very nice. You know, I don't know if I would say it 100% fits with something that Tolkien himself might have written, but I haven't thought about it in too much detail. Just kind of took it for what it was, and thought to myself, "Nice, I like it." You know, nice melody.
Yeah.
Nice kind of you know, pastoral feel to it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, pastoral is a good word.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. What'd y'all think? What'd y'all think? Let us know in the comments below. All right. Okay, I'm going to come back to this next comment. Remind me of this, Greta. Okay. So I don't forget. This is kind of a more general comment.
Okay.
All right. The Mithril. All right, so the story behind Mithril.
Yeah, was that... I was wondering, is that found in... Like, is that true to the lore?
What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. I feel like it could...
You have a guess?
I feel like it could be.
Could be.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like it could be. But I'm thinking no.
No. It's... Okay. There's nothing about that... nothing about that found in the lore. In fact... It kind of had me raising an eyebrow to think, like, how would that have worked? Because...
So basically, the story or the connection, the basically what they're saying is that the light of the Silmaril
mm-hmm.
is in the substance that of Mithril.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's right.
And then that little story that they told about how it came to be.
Yeah.
That wasn't... like part of the lore either.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Now there's been some speculation. Some people, I don't know that this is written anywhere or that Tolkien established this as lore. Some people speculate, I think, that the rings of power were made from Mithril. That may be somewhere in the lore, like in a, like somewhere written in there. I'm not 100% sure that it's not, but, this whole story about the warrior, the Elvish warrior and the Balrog fighting over this tree on the top of the Misty Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And there being like a Silmaril at the root of the tree. That's nowhere. Like that okay. doesn't come up. Now that, you know, doesn't mean there's anything necessarily wrong with that. But the only problem for me was the three Silmarils. So where are they at this point mm-hmm. in the history of Middle Earth? So in the Second Age, the three Silmarils were lost at the end of the First Age. One of the Silmarils is with Eärendil in the heavens, right? And mm-hmm. on his ship in the heavens, mm-hmm. right? It's actually the Evening Star. So it's actually the only one that's not lost in that sense because you can still see where it is. You just can't get to it, right? So it's up in the heavens. It's the, you know, it's the Evening Star. And then you've got one was lost in the sea, right? One was lost in the sea. And then a third was lost... Like, it was, I believe it was Mithros threw himself into a chasm. I think it was Mithros. It may have been somebody else. One of the other sons of Fëanor threw himself into a chasm of fire with it. And so it's like one is in the air, one is in the sea, and one is in like swallowed by the earth. Right. Now the one that was lost in the earth is the only one of those three that could be this Silmaril that's referred to in this legend.
Okay.
And that one was presumably, because it doesn't say anything that about him wandering all the way over to the Misty Mountains, not that I remember, presumably it was lost somewhere in Beleriand, and so it's now swallowed in the earth, but under, like, under the sea, right? Like, because Beleriand is now under the sea in the Second Age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't really, like, it's, I suppose you could just say, like, this story is just kind of a folk tale for the elves.
And they even say that, I mean, Elrond even makes the comment that it's apocryphal or something. Like, it's not kind of take it or leave it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, but that's, you know, so maybe that's what it is, and it's just like, but everybody knows, it's surprising to me they wouldn't even say, like, but everybody knows the three Silmarils, you know. Mm. Anyway, it was just, I'm not really sure what to make of that at this point, because if it becomes this big thing about, like, how there was, like, you know, and they keep on kind of repeating this story, And if they insist on Mithril, that being the origin of Mithril in a, like a real sense within the world, I feel like that is a major lore violation. Like it doesn't add up in terms of the lore, as far as I can tell. Again, the only thing would be if I'm wrong about if it does say that like this particular son of Fëanor wandered over to all the way to the Misty Mountains, but that was really far away in that time, right? So anyway, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I get that they want to make Mithril to be this, you know, to be this big thing, and there's Tolkien fans like to do that because Mithril is this really interesting
mm-hmm.
substance in the lore.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just don't necessarily see the connection of this particular story. I'm not saying that the Rings of Power themselves couldn't be made from Mithril. And in fact, I'm open that that may be actually be said somewhere specifically. But I'm not saying that, like, this story is just... Yeah, it doesn't really, like, make sense in terms of the lore, unless it's just some kind of, like, folktale that everybody knows isn't really true, but it's just a folktale. So, anyway, that's my point.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Okay.
And that being said, I mean, again, not the Tolkien expert that you and lots of other people are, but I don't have a problem with it. I'm kind of like, okay, like, that's fine. If we want to say that the Light of the Silmaril is in Mithril, like, Mithril is special, like, that makes it special, so... Okay. I mean, I guess I don't see that it really hurts anything.
Well,
that's all.
I don't have a problem with it as an apocryphal folktale. I guess I have a problem with it if it becomes this thing of, like, this actually happened. Now, we'll see. We'll see. Okay. But and if they, like, keep on referring to, like, Mithril as this substance. And here's the thing, okay? Here's where it does get really problematic, even within this episode for me, is this whole assertion that elves need Mithril, or they're going to,
yeah,
or like, elvish kind is going to end. You know, no,
that was
no,
a bit
no.
of a stretch.
Whoa,
yeah,
no,
yeah, I would agree. I thought that took it too far.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is going to be. I mean, this is a pretty big problem, right? This is an existential problem that the elves now face. So, okay, now we're making Mithril to be this really big deal. And I just, you know, I guess I don't see it. And it gets me to this next point that I had in my notes, which is...
Well, can just, I just say one thing super quick?
Okay.
About Mithril, unless was your next comment about Mithril? Or
it's kind of continuing. It's continuing on this plot line, but go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say that... Yeah, I think the thing about the elves needing, like, Mithril, like, specifically Mithril to survive, I feel like that's, like, taking it too far. But I will say, I think there is something to the fact that if they're going to make it so, you know, if their story is that Mithril contains the Silmarils, you know, this undying light, kind of their last connection, if you will, to the Blessed Realm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a problem with that, right? Because that shows just kind of the elves, like, it just harkens to that connection that they have with the Valar.
Mm-hmm.
And the Blessed Realm, you know, being the first children of Iluvatar.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if it's the light that they need, I don't really have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean... I guess I see that connection. I just feel like this is, and you won't get this reference, but because it's a Star Wars reference, but it's, I feel like this is, Mithril is becoming the midichlorians of Middle Earth.
And the midi-woodians?
The midichlorians, right? So just for those who don't know, and for your benefit, Greta, so basically... You know about the Force and, like, in Star Wars, right? So in the original trilogy, it's like, use the Force, right?
Like, the Jedi, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So may the Force be with you. It's kind of like this, you know, mysterious thing behind all of reality, right? That Jedi and like Darth Vader and those folks are able to channel for good or evil, right? In the prequel trilogy, what they did was they made the midichlorians, like, they wrote it so that if you have these midichlorians, then you can channel the Force, right? And it's like, hey, look, you can look in somebody's blood and see the midichlorians there. And it goes from being this thing that's like this mysterious thing that you can't actually, like, attain and manipulate to your own ends, except through sort of, through... I don't know, through mysterious power. And it always has rubbed me the wrong way, right? And to me, this is where this is going with Mithril, right? That they're turning it into this thing that's more than just this, you know, amazing substance, you know, that has these amazing properties to it and people can fashion into something beautiful. And they're trying to get down into... trying to get down into the details of it all, and some things are best just left to being mysterious, right? Especially in good storytelling, in my opinion. Because in reality, like, there's certain things that are mysterious. There's certain things that are, like, beyond getting to the nature of. And for me, that's something also I love about Tolkien. Not everything is a mystery, but there are certain things where you're just like, even he was not comfortable saying, this is what this is. Tom Bombadil, for example, right? Mm-hmm. If they come into this, you know, come into this series and try and tell us exactly who Tom Bombadil is, that's going to be really annoying, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think good storytelling necessitates that you don't try to unveil every mystery and explain every mystery, right? Yeah. Especially when it comes to fantasy storytelling. So,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
We'll see where this one goes, but I just don't know about this idea that, like, the elves. I get seeing how, like, that necessitates the creation of the Rings of Power, and these Rings of Power, like, they do play kind of that role of preserving what's left of Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. But what's really behind this problem, this blight that's coming over, that's coming over Middle Earth? We'll see. I mean, maybe it's going to work. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure how I feel about this so far, but it was just something about it feels a little too on the nose for me. But, like, this gets me to my bigger point about elves. I still just don't think Amazon really gets elves. And these elves are just boring, right? I mean, this is the stuff of tea parlor tragedies, not the Perilous Realm or the First Age, right? Like, I'm just like, I just, Elrond and Gil-galad and Celebrimbor, like, they're just, like, I'm sure we'll see them in action at some point, but I think they are more in danger of fading away from putting us to sleep than from mysterious blight at this point.
Mysterious blight.
I mean, I was like, they talked about, like, how they needed to tell the story in a certain way and take all these liberties with the timeline, because this isn't a documentary, man. Like, we're not just going to make a documentary of what Tolkien wrote. We're going to tell a story, you know? And it's like, you just manipulated the timeline and you're telling a boring story right now, right? Like, there's no, there's like, yes, there's action, but it's not, like, meaningful action. It's just like, here's an action scene. It's not, like, true. It's not, like, meaningful action. We're not actually seeing, like, character defined for all these, you know, for all the characters we have so far through, like, you know, these action sequences or these battle sequences or anything like that. You know, there's just nothing inspiring about these elf lords at this point. And then that brings us, of course, to Galadriel. She just can't stop fighting, you know?
Like, she's addicted to fighting.
You
know, it can be addictive, though. I'm just saying, that adrenaline rush and, yeah, you know, it's a great workout and endorphins and all that.
Yeah. She just owns all the fighting for the elves. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I get what you're saying about, like, especially Elrond and Gil-galad. Like, they do seem like they definitely have not inspired, like, amazing thoughts. But they do seem very regal, and that I appreciate. And I like, I will say, I really like I felt like the writing, especially in the conversations, like, around that table that they had in this mm-hmm. episode, I thought was really good. And I feel like they're, you know, I mean, maybe, like, we were talking about the Harfoots, like, maybe there's two different sides to the Harfoots. We've only just seen one side of the elves mm-hmm. so far. I'm hopeful that they'll kind of pick up speed, but I guess they don't bother me as much as they bother you.
But, yeah.
But even Galadriel, like, yeah, I thought that whole scene with Halbrand, I thought that was lame, like, because I can't stop. Like, I was, like, expecting her to, like, come up with, like, something, like, why she can't, like, when Hildebrand, is that his name? When he keeps, like, pushing her.
Halbrand.
Like, when he keeps pushing her. Like, yeah, you know, she tells him about his brother, and then he just keeps pushing her, like, what's behind this? And then she gets this look on her face, and I was like, oh, here it comes. It's going to be, like, something earth-shattering and amazing, and, you know, and then she says, because I can't stop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so you're an addict. Okay, great.
Addicted to fighting.
So, yeah, I didn't appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
But I did like the sword combat scene. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, it was fine, but that's kind of my point, is, like, we have, like, little scenes like that, but they're like a very little consequence, and they don't really tell us much about the character. They're just action sequences. Like,
well, they're showing us that she knows how to handle a sword.
But we already knew that because she single-handedly like offed that, you know, used her ninja skills to off that snow troll in the
that was
very
ninja
first
skills, not a sword.
Well, of course, if she's got ninja skills, she's going to be good with a sword. Durr.
We can't assume that, John. It's a very different skill set. Very different.
Nunchuck skills, drawing skills,
sword skills.
Oh yeah. Dance skills. Are you ready to get your groove on? Yes. It seemed a little choreographed to me, but anyway.
Yeah.
I just don't like these elves. I think these elves just stink at this point.
I don't think they stink. I would like to see them fight, but I don't think they stink. And I love Arondir. Like, I love him.
And here's the thing. Well, I do like Arondir. And that's the thing. Like, he's the only one that actually seems kind of elf-like to me, you know, like how I envision the elves. Like, remember.
Because he has a bow and arrow?
Mm-hmm. No, but because he's like actually, you know, he's actually something of a warrior, right? And again, like Galadriel, yes, she is. But like then again, Galadriel is nothing like she's written in the books, right? Now, I get the arguments for why she is the way she is right now. I think they're taking it to an extreme. I think they're taking that one point and they're going to an extreme with that for the sake of making, you know, the regnant follies, making everybody happy about, you know, the way things should be according to Hollywood and all of the regnant, you know, cultural people who say that's the way things should be now. But I think especially those three, Elrond, Gil-galad, and Celebrimbor, are just like not at all how I pictured them. Not at all. They just seem tired and boring and uninteresting. And I mean, to me, like, that's the one thing you got to get right is the elves, right? You, like, that's where all these stories come from. They were stories about elves in the first place. And all of the Middle-earth stuff comes from elves. And when you can't get that right, I just don't, like, it's hard to enjoy it. So anyway, I'll stop harping on that. You know where I stand.
Yes,
I'm probably
going
to keep coming back to that one until they, mm-hmm. I feel like they start to do something good with the elves.
Yeah, which I think they will.
And it's funny to me that the only elf that I actually like in this series is the one that's made up. That doesn't actually exist in the lore.
Yeah.
All right. Fodder Zone. Okay, so now we're getting somewhere, but why nothing about the longevity of elves versus men? So we learned about Fodder Zone and his reasons for kind of not putting up too much of a fight about this expedition, right? He's like encouraging the queen regent to use caution.
Mm-hmm.
We do get confirmation in this episode that they are in fact cousins. But we don't hear any, we haven't heard anything from Farazone yet about, his kind of like this bitter jealousy of the immortality of elves versus the mortality of men, which is, kind of a chief thing that drives him in Tolkien's writings. And that really drives the tragedy of Numenor in the first place, right? That drives the downfall of Numenor in the first place.
True.
See, if they don't go there, then he's just going to be this guy who is not as great a villain. He's not as great a villain and a tragic figure as Tolkien wrote him. Because if all of his concerns are just about worldly like wealth and that kind of thing, then that's kind of boring, right? That's just like, that's what everybody is concerned about. This is a dude who is, like I said before, he is full of despair, right? Because he knows he's going to die one day. And he is mad about that because he knows there's these other people, the elves, who get to live forever, right? And he's like, why don't we get that? And he wants to go all the way up to the doorstep of the gods and be like, hey, give us that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go right up and demand it. He wants to walk right in, demand his rights, even though he doesn't know what those rights are, right? I mean, that's who this guy is, right? And hopefully he kind of grows into those shoes because I'm not 100% feeling that so far. So, and then I'm not entirely sure why Kimmon and Eärion want to stop the expedition so bad.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. I was like, what? I mean, maybe Eärendil. Eärendil. Maybe yeah. She just didn't want, like, she doesn't want her brother to leave. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what Cayman's dog in the fight is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found myself wondering the same thing.
Or her father. I mean, her father's going too. Eärendil is going, right? Well, yes,
that is true. That is true. Yep.
And speaking of their family, I'm wondering if, I'm assuming, I think I've heard that Amandil, who is the other son of Eärendil, is going to show up at some point in the series. I really hope Eärendil hasn't taken his spot, because that is a huge lore violation, because Amandil and Isildur are both major parts of the end of the Second Age, right? And they both play a role in the founding of Arnor and Gondor. So that would be kind of a problem if Amandil doesn't show up at some point. And I'm kind of wondering why they haven't worked him in yet. But I'm assuming he'll show up, just like Celeborn will show up at some point. So
we can only hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, just some general thoughts. So general thoughts. Before I get into some general thoughts, do you want any other thoughts on particular items from this episode?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, if it comes up at some point, feel free to share.
Cool.
All right. So I feel like one thing that kept going through my mind with this episode is just how beholden, like, the whole series is so far to the Jacksonverse. And
can you define Jacksonverse?
Like the Peter Jackson films.
I know, but what do you mean by Jacksonverse?
Like the visual language of his films.
The visual language.
Right.
Okay.
The visual language of his films.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for making me be more specific on that. And look, I'm a big fan of those films. I even kind of like the Hobbit films, everybody. So, you know, it's not like I'm just a hater when it comes to visual adaptations of the Tolkien's works. I can see why they'd want to emulate that, but it, like, nothing feels like it's pushing beyond that very much at this point. Nothing feels like it's taking its own options. The one exception maybe being how they're handling the orcs so far, which is different and kind of cool, but that's the only thing I can point to so far that feels really different. And I'm even talking about like just certain scenes, like when we just got to see Halbrand creating a sword, right? And it's like, that they did that in Lord of the Rings, right? And in the Peter Jackson films, like, just gonna make me a sword right now. Ding, ding, ding. There you go. Right. I can point to one other scene. It's the scene where Galadriel's riding the horse in slow motion. That didn't feel like the Jackson verse, but it was really cringy.
That was incredibly cringy.
Yeah. Somebody made the comment. They were like, oh, now I see why they don't want Galadriel to smile more often.
Oh dear.
Yeah. It's like, ouch.
Oh.
Ouch. I was like, any one of us would look kind of goofy though if you filmed us like smiling in slow motion with like the wind blowing back her face.
Yeah,
like,
especially profile.
Yeah.
Like profiles are rarely flattering.
Yeah.
But
so yeah, I feel like there's nothing pushing pushing to a new, like, to kind of like further development of the visual language so far in this series. And to me that's a little bit disappointing. It just feels like it's all leveraging what Peter Jackson already did in its own visual storytelling. So feel free to disagree with me. I'm not a cinematography expert or anything like that, but that's just how I feel about it. So
I guess I'm wondering, like, what would you like to see?
I don't know, because I'm not the cinematographer. It's kind of like, well, how would you write elves differently? I don't know. I'm not getting paid all the money that the writers are getting paid to write this show, right? Like, but if I was, then I would want to do it differently. Right. And I would think very deeply about how I do that. And if I was a guy who got paid money to, you know, to like direct and, you know, achieve visual things, I got paid a lot of money to do this, then I would want to do, I'd probably want to, kind of use his visual language as a starting point, but I would want to go beyond it. Right. I'd want to do new things. And to me, like, from the very beginning, I was hoping this show would be more cutting edge, you know? And I'm not saying like, but because Peter Jackson's films were cutting edge at the time, right? And there's been, you know, at least since Lord of the Rings, you know, since Fellowship of the Ring, it's been over 20 years, right? Since those, you know, the majority of those films were filmed, it's been over 20 years. So there's been a lot of development on the cinematic front with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, even just like the pacing, actually, I don't think the pacing is as good as the Peter Jackson films, but that can be a function of the writing as and that, you know, Peter Jackson had more defined stories to work with. So I'll give him that right now. But again, like, I just think hundreds of millions of dollars spent on this thing, and this is the best you can do. It is just nothing pushing the envelope that says cutting edge to me, except for the opening sequence.
Yeah, the opening sequence is cool. The monsters in the woods were much better done this time, I thought.
The monsters in the woods. Oh, the wolves. The wargs.
Oh, the wargs. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all right. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that that effect was much better than the last time we saw that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give them that. But, you know, again, like, monsters, okay. But I'm just saying, like, the overall feel, like, I just wanted this to feel weirder. Like weird in the best possible sense. Like, what is this place? Like, it's, oh man, it's so unlike, it's like our world, but so unlike our world, right? It, you know, like, kind of startling.
Like a parallel universe, like, kind of thing, but like weirder.
Like, just like, you, it's almost like beautifully unsettling, right? Beautifully other, beautifully, beautifully of another time, another place that we are only distantly connected to, mm-hmm. right? And I don't, I, everything just feels very kind of standardized, what you might expect from somebody who's just trying to get an ROI on an investment, right? In terms of, you know, in terms of what they're putting, you know, what they've bought the rights to, right? And that gets me to the point I skipped earlier. I've been thinking a lot about this idea of enchantment and suspension of disbelief, because this is something that Tolkien talks about in On Fairy Stories, is kind of a chief effect of good fantasy storytelling, in his opinion. And, you know, I really feel like if you want to understand where Tolkien is coming from when he writes his Middle Earth stories, you have to know On Fairy Stories, because he lays it all out there. It's what he wrote between, he wrote it, just as he had finished up writing The Hobbit and just as he was about to jump into writing Lord of the Rings. So it's almost kind of like the manifesto for the theoretical manifesto for the Lord of the Rings. Right. And, the basic idea is enchantment means that you are so caught up in what's going on that you've almost like forgotten yourself, right? Like you feel like you're in the midst of it, and you're not sitting there thinking like, oh, that probably didn't happen, or oh, that just doesn't feel right, you know, like, and having to kind of like think about yourself referentially and like how you're feeling about it. You're just feeling it, right? You're just in the middle of it. Kind of like Galadriel was riding that horse, right? You're just in the middle of it, right? And just feeling it.
You don't care
it,
who's watching.
Feeling it, baby, yeah. Right? He actually kind of compares this to the idea of somebody playing cricket, which he was like, I'm not really a cricket player, but I know people who love cricket, and when they're watching it, playing it, they're just in it, right? And there's, and you know, sometimes that's how I get with baseball, right? I get fired up about things. Gretel will tell you that, right? And then there's suspension of disbelief, right? Suspension of disbelief is, you know, basically he's saying like, that's not what I'm trying to achieve. And actually, I think if that's all I achieve, then that's a failure, right? When I have to sit there, when somebody has to sit there and think like, okay, I guess I'll buy this, right? You know, for the sake of having a good time, I guess, you know, just kind of go along with it. Then Tolkien's like, I failed. If that's what you feel like you have to do when you come to my stories, then I feel like I'm a failure, right? With enchantment, you're not conscious of yourself and of your own reactions. You're under a spell of sorts, completely engrossed. Mm. Suspension of disbelief means you are remembering yourself, learning, taming your doubts, not really believing what you are seeing. So, and you know, as I sat there watching this episode, I felt more on the suspension of disbelief kind of frontier of things. And I would say overall through five episodes, that's how I've been feeling. So anyway, that was just kind of a little
manifesto
excursion of mine there, Greta.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the mysteries?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Or if you had anything to say about what I just said, feel free, but you don't have to.
I think the only thought that I think occurred to me was that I think the whole idea of enchantment versus suspension of belief, I think it's a lot easier to become enchanted when you're reading and not watching.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my two cents. Because like when you're reading a book, right, like you're looking down, you really can't see anything in your periphery. There's very little distractions. Whereas like I just think about when we're watching anything, really, like you're not looking down, you're looking up. You can see everything that's happening around you. You know, like it's just, I feel like it's easier. I feel like authors have an easier job of enchanting readers than filmmakers do.
I disagree.
That's fine.
I disagree. That's totally fine. And if you'll allow me just to explain briefly.
Sure.
I see where you're coming from. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But I can list off a number of TV shows that, that enchant me.
Saying there aren't any. I'm just saying I think it's a more difficult task for a film or TV maker than it is for an author. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's equal. I think whatever field, whatever form of art you're in, whether it's music, just like a standard visual media, you know, medium like painting or something like that. I think any of those things, like it's hard to do in any of those things, right? But it's a hallmark of something that's truly great. Like that's truly great, right? Versus just, oh, that's nice, right? I can see it applying to any area of the arts, right? And so for an artist to work in that particular space, it's the difference between great and merely good or less art, right? Or lesser art, right? Like I said, I don't think it's necessarily fair to cross between those two things, because I think there's some storytellers that they can't achieve like anything beyond the suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain authors like Tolkien who can achieve that, right? They can achieve that enchantment. And I don't think it just applies to fantasy. I think he was talking about fantasy, but mm-hmm. I even think like in a stage set, like in a stage production, mm-hmm. I think there's like the best stage productions can put you in that state of enchantment, right? Because they're so well done.
Oh, absolutely.
And I will say with film, I think where I'd agree with you is, there's so many more people that have to play a part in create, like an author is just a one man show, right? Maybe you argue with the editor, right? But with a TV show, right, especially a TV show of this magnitude, there's a lot of people that play their parts in this, right? Mm-hmm. There's music, there's writers, there's directors, there's cinematographers, people who hold cameras, the people who say what people are going to look like before, you know, and what different scenes are going to look like. They sketch them out beforehand so that the directors know what they're working with. All of that stuff goes into it. So in that sense, mm-hmm. it's a much more collaborative effort. Yeah. I will give you that. But one would assume that, you know, the people who are doing this are up to the task of creating something great. And so my point is that I don't feel like it's achieving that high bar, and it is a high bar. I'm not saying it's not a high mm-hmm. bar, but it is not mm-hmm. achieving that high bar. And my problem is I don't want to excuse Amazon. I don't want to give Amazon an out for it, right? Because I'm like, you guys paid all that money for it, right? You guys said sure. you were up to this task and you're not achieving this high standard, right? I mean, I'm not going to make excuses for, first of all, Amazon, second of all, for no matter how much I like my Prime membership, okay, and my free shipping, I'm not going to make excuses for them because they're Amazon, and because they paid all this money to do this, right, with the expected return on investment from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to them to find the right people to do it
mm-hmm.
and have the right vision. And I don't see why I should lower my standards when it comes to that. So
that's fine. But at the end of the day, again, it's just your standards, right? It's like a very personal thing. Like when you're talking about the elves, you like, it's not how I pictured them, right? It's like, it's your subjective thing. And that's, I think, the thing that authors have in their favor that maybe filmmakers don't, is it's up to the reader to imagine these things, right? And then when someone goes to adapt that, it's like, well, that's not how I pictured it. Okay, that doesn't mean it's not good. It's just maybe not how you pictured it, but it's like, you know what I mean? Like there just can be some kind of like disconnect there. It's just a very subjective process.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. Because honestly, I didn't have Gil-galad pictured any way, shape, or form. I didn't have Celebrimbor pictured at all. So you know, maybe I'm at an advantage in that particular.
I don't know that I had them pictured myself either. But that's, again, that's my point. It's not that I already had my own vision of all of this stuff going in and how it should be.
But you must have, if it's not living up to it.
Well, I think it's when I think about it a little more deeply, right? When I look at what's being presented to me, and I came into this show wanting to just kind of like let them do their thing and be delighted, you know, hopefully be delighted with it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I have to automatically be delighted with anything.
No, you don't.
And I'm not willing. There are some people who are saying, you know, Amazon didn't have access to this or to this because they just had access to Lord of the Rings and the appendices. And I'm like, well, then if you don't have access to it, then you tell a different story, right? Or you tell the story in such a way that you don't have to talk about that particular thing. It's not my job to make excuses for a huge company that paid more money than I can possibly, more money than Scrooge McDuck has in his money bin for this, for the rights to this thing, and expected to make money off of it, right? It's just not my job, you know? And I'm not going to force myself into enjoying something either. No, right.
And you because, shouldn't.
If people truly enjoy it, I'm not here to take that away from them. I'm just here to give my honest reaction. And if people, I think it's legitimate to say, like, what would Tolkien have thought about this? Right. And we can't know, I get it. We can't know for sure because he's not here to tell us, but it's not like he didn't say certain things. It's not like he didn't lay out certain principles. It's not like he didn't, respond to a screenplay in his own letters that was proposed to him and say, like, this is wrong, and give reasons for why that was wrong, right? That go more than just like, I don't like this, right? Mm-hmm. He gave principles about certain things. And, you know, when I look at what this show is and I have a certain reaction to it, you know, again, like, I guess I'm just trying to explain where I'm coming from, because I know there's people out there that probably want to like this show and everything like that, but I just don't feel like people, just don't force yourself into liking it just because you feel like you should, because there's a lot of people out there that are like saying, like, if you don't like the show, then you're a bad person.
I'm not.
I know you're not. I'm just saying I feel it's up to them to make an awesome show. It's up to them make an awesome show. And I just don't want to lower my standards for that. So anyway, mm-hmm. we went on about that for a long time. And people are probably getting bored of this, or they probably hate me by now. But that's all right, because lots of people are already hate me about for sharing strong opinions in the past. All right. So, all right. Let's see. Mysteries. All right. The Stranger. Who is he? We've talked about this. The Man in the Moon? I mean, that actually seems like it might make sense to me now, right? And again, like, this is one of those things that I actually kind of like. I'm actually kind of intrigued by this whole idea. So, mm-hmm. You know, we'll see where it is. And the other mystery we have here that I realized in this episode is we still don't know whether he's good or bad, right? We kind of think he's good because he's hanging with the Harfoots and mm-hmm. he seems like a pretty okay guy. Like, he's mm-hmm. helping them out.
And Nori said he was good.
Well, she said he was good, mm-hmm. but what does she really know, right? Does mm-hmm. she really know everything about him?
Yeah.
And he's saying, like, point. I'm good, right? So there's obviously a theme there, right? There's something, there's like a little, there's a little sub theme, a little thread being introduced right there of, is he good or is he bad? Because he's like, but the fireflies, right? And then he's like, mm-hmm. in my arm, right? And then, it, you know, when Nori runs away from him after she almost gets her arm frozen, we have all of the, like, kind of sinister, like, blowing of the wind and the trees and the forest and everything while we're looking on his face, right?
That's right.
So it seems like he may be good at heart, but there's something bad about, like, he's like, it's like he's radioactive or something like that, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
So
it's complicated. Yeah.
Adar, who is he? An elf? Sauron? Probably not Sauron. But he never says explicitly, I'm not. He just tells Waldreg to prove it, right? By shedding blood, mm-hmm. right? Which we assume Waldreg does.
Right. So but we don't know for sure.
Yeah. Well,
but he probably did.
Yeah. Let's face it, Waldreg probably was like, "Nah, I'll do that."
Yeah.
Why is Isildur drawn to the west, and who keeps whispering his name? We heard a little bit more about this in the episode, but no revelations. So no update on this one. So Halbrand, who is he? And is he going back? Yes, he's going back. And then the big mystery now is, what did he do that was so bad? Like, what was it that he did in the past that was so bad? And I guess we will probably find the answer to this in later episodes.
Probably.
Theo, who's his father? How did he get that mark? We don't really know yet. Still don't know. Still don't know any of this stuff.
I was really relieved that he didn't go with Waldreg, though. I was afraid he was going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I'm going through all these things, what's interesting to me is that the things that I actually do like enjoy about the show so far are all the things that they made up from scratch. It's like whenever it comes down to like things that involve actual events or characters that Tolkien wrote about in the lore, mm-hmm. it's like, ah, oh, not getting this right.
That's because you had them pictured differently.
But I didn't. I legitimately did not come into this show picturing like with like preconceived notions of how everything should be. Okay, all I'm saying is just that it's like it doesn't blow my mind in a good way, right? It's kind of
that's
like
fair. That's fair. Yeah,
you know, boring. Like that's just like, come on, you can do better. Like Numenor should be so much cooler than this. The elves should be so much cooler than this, right? Just general ideas of like it should be cooler, right? Anyway, Muriel, who's her father? Well, we know it's Tar Palantir. And he's up on his feet in this episode. So he seems to be getting better, maybe, but he's still, you know, not all there, very old. So I don't know that he'll last much beyond this season. And then the biggest mystery introduced this episode, who are the three sinister folks examining the crater?
They did look very sinister.
Well, I mean, that's the only word that's appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. Who are the three sinister folks examining the crater? Yeah. One of them looked like Eminem. But I think probably may have been female because they appeared to have breasts. So, but maybe I read that wrong. I'm not sure. So I couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell either.
All right. So sinister, Slim Shady. We'll just call that one Slim Shady.
Sounds good.
Yeah. That's one of Eminem's names.
Oh, right? Is it?
Yeah. Slim Shady.
Okay.
Slim Sinister. There you go. All right. Any other mysteries, Greta, from this episode?
No, I think we're good.
All right.
That's all of them.
Right on. All right. So score time.
Score time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You ready?
Yep.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Boom.
Boom.
You go first.
I think I'm stuck on scissors. And you like, no, I'm stuck on scissors. All right. You ready for mine?
Let's do it.
Are you sure you're ready for mine?
I'm ready. I want you to go first for a reason.
Yeah. All right.
What's that 5 seconds thing?
If you want to guess our scores, yeah, 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boom. 3 out of 10.
Wow. Sorry. Is that your lowest yet?
Yeah, I think it's my lowest
so far. Okay, interesting.
I know I was like 7.5 on the last episode, and I just, as I was watching this one, I was like, I guess just the weight of the last 5 episodes all together is like crashing in on me. And I'm like, where is this thing going? Like, why is it like, you guys heard it all. So I'm not going to belabor all of the things that I complained about in this episode. But it's just not, it's just not what I hoped it would be. And again, like people, you know, people probably think I have all these preconceived notions of how it should have been. I legitimately didn't, other than just, I wanted it to be true to Tolkien, right? That's all. And I'm not feeling that. And you are 100% free to disagree with me and to enjoy it for how you will. And I am still pulling for it to turn things around. And I will be legitimately delighted if next episode it just all gets awesome and they reveal certain things. And I'm like, oh, it all makes sense now why the elves are lame and Numenor is lame, right? But I'm just not, it's not there for me. A couple of other things I'll just note. It doesn't feel epic. And what I mean by that is everything feels like it's kind of set on a stage and close together. Even Halbrand talking about, like, you know, the Southlands getting invaded, like, and then he's lost at sea, and it all seems like that takes place in a very short period of time, because he knows about the movement of the orcs in the Southlands right now, and he's all the way over here in Numenor. So how could he know that? Well, it must not have been very long ago that he was in the Southlands. Either that or he's Sauron, right? He just has this knowledge because he knows, right? Which is possible. We haven't established that's not true. But let's assume he's not. Let's just assume for a second he's not, okay? he knows about the movement of the orcs in the Southlands and assume that's what's still happening. How long would it have taken him to travel from the Southlands, even as a refugee, to travel from the Southlands to the ocean and to where he met up with Galadriel, right? Like, that would have taken a long time, right? Weeks at least, probably maybe months, right? And now he's in Numenor, and they're going to journey back, and that's going to take a good amount of time because this is the age of sail, right? They don't have power boats, right? And then they've got to journey all the way over to the Southlands from there. Like, this is probably going to take at least all of these events are probably going to take at least a year, maybe a couple of years, right, to unfold, right? And it's just all like it happens in a short period of time. The journey from Lindon back to the western entrance to Khazad Dûm and the Misty Mountains, like, that's going to take a long time, right? And it just feels like it's no big deal for them, right? And they're just like, you're going to carry this table back to Khazad Dûm, right? Like, I am just utterly disappointed by the ability of these showrunners to make it feel epic and expansive in all the ways that it should. And that's why I don't give them the credit enough to say that there's five meteors. I just think they didn't think about, like, oh, this one would be going this way and it looks like it's going this way over the Southland. So anyway, that's it, Greta. Sorry. I have a feeling you're going to give this a higher rating and you go and do your thing because, you know.
Oh, I will.
All right, do it.
I don't need your permission.
Well, good. I'm glad because I feel like I've been raining on people's parade in this episode of the show. And well, I'm not trying to do that.
I'll be the sunshine.
You are my sunshine.
All right. So, do you want to guess my score?
An 8.
He got it. I gave it an 8.
An 8.
Yes.
All right. I did. Tell me why.
I legitimately gave it an 8. I really liked it. I just truly enjoyed, like, I don't know, maybe it was the caffeine high from my coffee. I don't know. But I loved the writing. I thought the writing was fantastic. Galadriel was, like, much less annoying to me in this episode. Still a teeny bit annoying, but really just that main scene where she admits that she's addicted to fighting. Like, she needs to go to, like, Fighters Anonymous or something. I think that's because
she was on screen less time.
Huh? It may be. It may be. But I really liked, like, the time that she was on screen. Yeah. I really liked most of that. I love that scene between Arondir and Theo. Like, when he's talking about, like, teaching him how to use the bow, like, it just had a very, like, father-son kind of vibe to it. And I loved what he said to Theo. I thought it was really beautiful. And I loved the music. Like, I thought the music in this episode was just lovely. And
the music. I like the music a lot so far, you know, in general. Yeah.
Yeah. And it had my Harfoots. Didn't have Disa, but it had my Harfoots, which I loved. And I really appreciated that Gil-galad gave a shout out to Ale. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Ale came up. Yep.
And yeah, I don't know what this says about my loyalty to Tolkien lore or whatever, but I just really enjoyed it. And I loved the ending where, you know, with the Numenoreans marching out to get on the boat and all the fanfare that accompanied that. And just the, you know, this mounting anticipation of this huge battle that's to come. Like, I really enjoyed that. Like,
yeah.
Just the buildup to all of that. And I really like that Isildur found his way onto the boat, even if it is sweeping up horse poop. I thought that was cool. So.
Right on.
That's
well,
my score.
Well, we can agree to disagree.
We can agree to disagree. And you know what? I was thinking about this. It's obviously our most controversial episode yet, I think. We've disagreed the most on this one. But I think it's good. Because, like, I watch a lot of home buying and, like, home improvement shows. And in a lot of those, like in a particular one, love it or sell it or what's it called? Like it or no. It's where they have to decide to buy it or to keep it or sell. I don't know. Anyway, but the husband and wife in those shows, like, they always have polar opposite views. Like, one always wants to stay in the house and the other one wants to buy something new. So I think it makes for good TV, and hopefully maybe if we continue to disagree, I don't know that we will, but I think it'll make for good podcasting. Good discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
because it gets boring when everybody agrees all the time.
Well, so. This is true. This is true.
Just saying.
We, you know, anyway, yeah, it was a good discussion. And hopefully, hopefully folks understand where both of us are coming from. Mm-hmm. Really interested to know what people thought about this one. Cause again, she gave it an 8, I gave it a 3. What score did you give this one? Right. Let us know in the comments below. Let us know the reasons why. You know, let's continue the conversation, and hopefully for me, episode 6 will be a winner. And, this last 3 episodes will finish out the season strong. So,
can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Were you being sarcastic when you thought I was going to give it an 8, or did you genuinely think I was going to give it an 8?
No, I thought, it was a guess, but I mean, I had no idea what actually you were going to give it, but I feel like with what
you seemed surprised when I told you that was my actual number.
With how you were, I mean, how would I have known for sure? Did you write it down somewhere?
No. Okay. I didn't. I was just wondering if that was like your genuine guess, or if you were trying to be like tongue in cheek.
No. That was my genuine guess.
Well, then you know me very well.
Because, I could just tell that you seemed to defend it against a lot of the things I was saying. So I just assumed that you liked this episode better. You know, you actually liked this episode a lot, based on all of that. So,
good thinking, good detective work.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Next time I'm going to give you a heads up ahead of time, you know, that, I really didn't like an episode, so we can hate on it together. So
that's no fun.
I'm just kidding. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for watching. So subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes, your preferred source for the show, and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. And drop us a line. You can correspond with us in a number of ways. Check out the show notes to learn more. We'll do our best to respond to you somehow and at some point. And thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R.,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Jacob Lockham,
John H.,
Scotchy Bobo,
Ms. Anonymous,
Andrew T.,
Red Hawk,
Shannon S.,
Brian O.,
Emilio P.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
James L.,
Chris L.,
Chuck F.,
Asya V.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C.,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D.,
Eric B.,
Johanna T.,
Mike M.,
Robert H.,
Paul D.,
Julia,
Ware T.,
Matthew W.,
Joe Bagelman,
Chris K.,
Jacob S.,
Richard K.,
Matt R.,
Garrett P.,
and John W.
As well as those celebrating their Patreon anniversary this month in September 2022. Brielle A.
Dustin Q.
Johanna T.
Robert S.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you guys.
We really appreciate you and all of our patrons.
Indeed.
And thanks everybody for watching and listening. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.